Welcome back to the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. This week I am joined by Joy Clark. Joy is the Chief People Officer at Worldwide Clinical Trials. Joy, I've had a few folks from Worldwide on the show before, but look, if you were to give us a short introduction about yourself and the organisation so that the audience know who you are and who Worldwide is, that would be awesome.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. I'm happy to be here. Like Joy Clark, the Chief People Officer for Worldwide Clinical Trials. In terms of how I got to be here, I started working in a family business really early, got an introduction to talent acquisition and recruiting in college, working for my mom, which was an experience, in the days of recruiting AS400 programmers, which tells you how old I am. Over time, moved around for opportunity and for growth, both for mine and for the company, gathering experiences really from all different HR knowledge sets. And that led eventually to my first head of HR job in 2015, and then joined Worldwide in 2019 to lead what we called at the time the HR department, but today we call it People Strategy and Workplaces.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, I guess like myself, perhaps fell into recruitment. It was a little bit closer to home for yourself with your mum running. And was it her own agency, was it? Or was she?
Yeah, it was in New Jersey and she had a partner. They recruited AS400 C++ programmers in the late 80s, early 90s. And I would come in and get a printout from a dot matrix printer and then start my cold calling for my mom. And again, this was back in the old days where you faxed resumes. So we would, you know, take the worker's name off the resume by covering it with a piece of paper and tape and then faxing it to the company so they wouldn't know who our secret candidate was. And things have certainly changed since those days.
They have indeed. Us recruiters don't know that we're born these days with what we've got access to in terms of LinkedIn and the tools. So I guess that's a whole nother story I could perhaps talk about off of the podcast. That's incredible that it used to work in that way. But look, in terms of, so you then got your first head of HR gig in 2015, joined Worldwide. Did you say 2018 or 2019?
2019, I joined Worldwide.
2019. And it's now labeled as kind of head of people, culture, strategy. What does that entail then? What's the, what's been the change? You know, what does, I guess, effectively a chief people officer do? What's the difference between that and just straight up, not so much sending faxes these days with names removed and things like that? What's the difference between what you're doing now and I guess standard recruiting before we kind of move forward?
Yeah. So taking a little bit of a step back, when I joined Worldwide, I was offered the job of Chief Human Resources Officer. Yeah. And the more I started to learn about a CRO or a contract research organization, I realized that really we're a people services business. That's what we do. We don't have a product. We don't make a cell phone or have a cell tower or sell an LED light bulb. Our people are the resource. They're the product that we have. And so I wanted to rename the function to Chief People Officer and to have the department named People Strategy and Culture, because that's what it is. And I think sometimes with this weird terminology of human resources, people forget that the human resources are people, they're human beings. So I wanted to bring that to the forefront of the function for our own team to be aware of and to be mindful of every time they talk about what they do, but also for our company to be mindful of it. Every time a manager talks about the HR department, they should be talking about the people team. So that was the impetus for changing it and for getting it called that at Worldwide.
Okay. So what is it that, I guess, a chief people officer necessarily does? I guess for, you know, someone like myself, you know, I work in recruiting. I work in this space of, pharma, biotech, CROs, et cetera. So I'm quite familiar with the term, albeit, as you say, it's not been around for years, chief people officers. It's kind of a newish thing. So for those who aren't, I guess, as well versed in the game as you and I, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? It sounds like there's much more to it than just kind of the old school HR and recruiting.
For sure. I mean, we work in very tight alignment with our business development and our operations teams because we are a people services business. So everything has to be aligned with making sure that we have people to do the work when the work needs to be done. So it starts with labor modeling and workforce planning and making sure that we have the right headcount open, that we have the right requisitions available, that they're opened in a period of time that we can successfully fill the position in whatever part of the planet the position is in. So that's how we kind of think about attraction, that we've got a good employer value proposition to bring people into the company. And then once they get here, we have to be sure we have the proper legal entities, we have the proper benefits, we have the proper culture so that people want to stay here and they want to do the work with us. And then we also have to make sure we're training and developing them and offering them career development and growth over time so that all these investments that we're making in these folks means that they can live the career that they want to live and have the career that they want to have with us as opposed to going someplace else. So that's kind of a little bit of the life cycle. It includes making sure they're paid properly, benefited properly, treated fairly and equitably in terms of employee relations, that we're partnering with the business on organizational design and development. Our company has grown materially 105% since I got there. And you can't do that if you don't have a plan. I mean, I guess you could, but it would be kind of a mess. So, you know, we work with operations and business development and company leadership to make sure we have a really strong growth plan.
Okay, so it sounds that, I mean, that is just boggling my brain just how much is in this, involved with this. And I guess, look, have you seen the film Bruce Almighty?
Yes.
I'm picturing you right now as like Morgan Freeman here of how do you keep so many people happy in different departments, in different countries and different things. So look, on that,
Yeah.
I guess if we talk about worldwide, so you're a global contract research organization, the type of people that you are bringing in and the function, so you mentioned business development, but how do you manage things over such a broad scope of individuals? That's why that Bruce Almighty thing came into my thing of trying to keep different, types of people happy. So what goes into the strategy for that? And is there different, I guess, tactics or strategies that you have to employ in different countries, in different verticals? How does
For
that all look
sure.
from your end?
Yeah, it's very complex, right? We have 3,300 employees in 60 countries doing at least 100 different jobs, right? Hundreds of different jobs. And every single one of those 3,300 people is an individual and unique human being, right? With their own sets of motives and passions and challenges, right? So we're not going to have a customized solution for every single human. It would be impossible, and they'd each have to have their own dedicated people partner, which we don't have. So as a strategy, we try to focus on philosophically, what is the part that's always true? What is the part that no matter what set of labor laws or what set of employee benefit plans or what type of recruitment laws or what type of headcount volume, what is the part that's always true? So that's philosophically how we anchor our minds and our approach. And then we try to keep our efforts focused on three distinct areas. The culture, it's one of belonging. It's one where people can be their best at work. They can bring their full selves to work and be effective. It's about compensation, making sure that we pay people fairly. We're not going to pay the best. We're not going to pay the worst. We're going to pay fairly for the work that's done. And that includes the pay, the benefits, all the long-term reward strategies, et cetera. And then the third is career. You know, we have our organization is 76% female, and we have an average age of 43. So career really matters to this group of people, right? It's the sandwich generation in many ways. A lot of folks in our company have aging parents and young families, right? So we've got to make sure that career development really speaks to them, is that they have opportunities to improve themselves, whatever their aspirations are. So that's how we focus on it.
Interesting. And was all of this in place when you joined back in 2019, or has this been kind of an ongoing process? So, I mean, if I asked you, I guess, how things looked when you took the job on to how things have changed, what's the perhaps the main changes that you've been implementing at that time? And feel free to brag.
Yeah, I have a hard time doing that, so I may have to coax it out of me. But when I joined, it was fairly disjointed as an HR function or as a people function. And there were times when I was, I mean, quite honestly, afraid of when I pick up this rock, what am I going to find underneath it?
Yeah.
And so we spent really the first year cleaning things up, organizing, what are all the things that are true about our company that we wish weren't? And then to really listen. I traveled the world listening to employees and understanding what was important to them. I held so many focus groups. And the thing that I heard over and over again, both in the focus groups and in our exit interviews, was this underlying sense of love and passion for what they do and for each other. And I thought, that's kind of a weird thing to hear about in an exit interview. Love, that seems weird. And I spent most of my career in technology. It's kind of weird to talk about love at work. But in this particular company, it was a very prevalent force. So we leaned into that, right? How do we meet our company where it is and start to meet our employees where they are and develop the people-centric programs that were important? So culture, absolutely focused on a culture of belonging, that at the front and center for sure. Making sure that we're paying people fairly and equitably everywhere, which is hard to do. It's a moving target. And to make sure that we've got these training and development programs in place, and that all of our workplaces enable people to come in and to do their best work. Now, as we're laying all of the groundwork for this and getting all of this going, there was this small disruption called a global pandemic, right?
Just a little one, yeah.
Just a little one. And then we had this, you know, lots of other disruptive events, geopolitical crises that affect our employees, climate crises that affect our employees. And we tried to keep that compassion and that love at the center of every decision that we made. So our philosophy is employees first, customers second, shareholders third. Those are our constituents, if you will.
Yeah.
And so using that love that our employees told us they felt so strongly as the center of belonging, and then applying to each of those constituents accordingly, that was really the basis of our approach.
Okay. And I guess that belonging word, you've mentioned it a couple of times. If in terms of when we think culture, and everyone says culture is everything these days, but it's quite hard to mold in, I guess, an organization of such a size. Clearly, you've run the focus groups, you've traveled the world doing that. What is it about, you think, maybe worldwide, that you've managed to implement that you get that? Because I think not often when a company goes over a certain size, it just, people, I guess, they don't necessarily have that same feeling. And I've been there. Yep. Holding my hands up, and this is nothing against you guys, I've never been a bigger company type of guy, just because as soon as it got over, even sometimes like 50 people, it just changed. So how do you feel that you've, or is there anything in particular that you've implemented? Is there like a secret sauce you have, Joy, that is, bringing people and keeping them at worldwide?
I mean, I think there is a little bit of a secret sauce. I refer to it as an alchemy. There's no one single action that you can take to create a strong corporate culture. Mm. It's a series of decisions and behaviors on an everyday basis. Because culture, really, it's the organizational evidence that we leave laying around our companies that says this is how things get done around here, and here's what we reward. Right? Like that's what employees tune into. So we try to be very intentional with a very few number of things. You know, one is our marketing team and our people team work very, very closely together because we should promise our employees and our customers the same thing. So if we promise our customers something that we don't promise our employees, right? So customers, we're going to promise you, you get the A team when you work with Worldwide. You get the best team in the business when you work with us. If we don't promise that to our employees, there's no way we can deliver it to the customer. Right? And so we've been very intentional in our alignment of our cultural promises to the customer and to the employee. So one example of that is our customers and our employees are promised a lot of access to our leadership when things need attention. So our CEO and I offer Let's Talk sessions every 2 weeks with a random group of employees or a targeted group of employees, depending on what's going on. We talk to new hires, we talk to long service employees, we talk to people from all over the world, and we listen. What's on their mind? What's going on? What are they upset about? And then we have firsthand knowledge. Now, a lot of companies will say, let's do a survey, right? We'll do a survey to come up with that same data. And for me, that's the survey is a tremendously unscalable activity and oftentimes a waste of time. But there's a lot greater commitment to something when you can sit with a human being and listen to their story, what drives them crazy about their job, what they love about their job. I can't unhear that, right? Our CEO can't unhear that. And we offer that to customers and we offer it to employees.
Wow. I mean, I've actually kind of, now that you've said that, it almost rings true of some of the things that I've seen on LinkedIn. And I guess perhaps this is with the alignment with the marketing team where I've seen, is it Peter Benson? Is that your CEO?
Yeah, that's our CEO.
Well, I often see him, you know, promoting like CRA academies and things like this. And I don't necessarily see that from many other, what I would class as large organizations where the CEO has, you know, got involved at that level. So to hear that actually, you know, yourself and him are holding these one-to-one talks is, yeah, I guess credit to yourself. I wasn't aware that these sort of things happen. And, you know, having had several of your VPs on the podcast previously, everyone, to be fair, has often, you know, typically come across really well, very down to earth. And that's the sense that I think that you seem to be giving off with a lot of the marketing. And you know, hearing you today, Joy, I guess that's perhaps why. And do you, I mean, so do you feel that that does come from the top down? Because I guess in order for you to implement what you want to implement, perhaps sometimes you need to get that signed off from the higher ups. And it's all, I guess, that cascade effect, isn't it? So is there openness all the way?
I mean, yes and no. I obviously there has to be alignment and support from the top of an organization for cultural change or experience to be consistent. But there's 3,300 people in here in this company, right? And every major culture change story we've ever heard about, right? NASA and the space shuttle disasters, they changed out their entire leadership and nothing changed. There was a second space shuttle disaster. And the reason is the culture is bigger than the top down, right? The culture is all of us every single day and all of the choices and actions that we make. So yes, you need to have executive senior leadership team alignment, which we have. And you also need it to be proliferated and experienced at all levels of the company.
Yeah.
So sometimes I get frustrated when I hear people say, oh, well, we can't do this unless we get the SLT to approve it. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. There's 3,300 of us here. If we all wait for our boss to do something, we won't get it done. Right. And we want people who are entrepreneurial and creative and take reasonable risks. Right. So that we can get the most out of every single position that works here. If we didn't need all 3,300, then we would only, if we only needed Peter, we'd only have Peter. we wouldn't need all 3,300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So if we were to, now, I guess, in terms of that, like, as you say, like there was that massive bump with COVID, which I guess for many in clinical research was kind of a silver lining because there was a lot of work. It was really busy. But in terms of juggling probably that immense demand for people at that time, how did you cope with that? What was the biggest challenge in that? Because when I was speaking to organizations at that time, just quite simply could not get enough good people in the door fast enough. So what, I mean, is that the biggest, was that the perhaps biggest challenge for yourself? Was it getting enough people? Was it getting the right people or something else, I guess?
I think I would say that the challenge changed over time, right?
Right.
In the beginning, it was watching lockdowns roll across the globe, right? Mm. Right. Our head of workplaces, I remember he put in our chat, hey, there's this thing called the coronavirus, and it's causing some companies to shut down in these countries. We should start to pay attention to this.
Mm.
And so we started this global tracker of watching case counts in all of our major countries. And how are we going to deal with all of this if people can't get to clinical research sites? You have to get there to do the work and to bill for the work. So that was kind of problem set A, is what's happening, right? Mm. Problem set B, now that we think we know what's happening, we have a guess of what's happening, what's the impact going to be? And our belief was that our work wouldn't go away. It might be delayed, but the work was not going to go away. So we made a very conscious decision at that time not to lay anyone off. A lot of other companies did. We made a decision that we were not going to do that. We were going to share the pain and find other ways of keeping cash flow going, but we weren't going to let anybody go because we believed that the work would come back, which it did. And we took a very employee-centric approach to the way that we did it. All of us were in it together so that we could have a solution that maintained and kept as many jobs as possible.
Wow.
So that was kind of the next set of problems, right? Now that everybody understands they have a job and how we're figuring out how to get people where they need to go. Can you travel? Can you not travel? Do you wear a mask? Do you vaccinate? What do you do, right? Then you start to move into some different types of affects, which were the ones you're talking about on the labor market.
Mm.
Right. So we saw our turnover go up just like everybody else's did. And we saw the competitiveness for candidates become unprecedented. Right.
Oh, yeah, just like everybody else. I've not heard it for about 6 months.
I know, right? Someone had to throw in that terrible word. I guess it should be me. But it was a cocktail, right? Because you've got record high turnover and record high time to fill.
Mm.
So we, again, worked in very close partnership with operations, and we made some strategic decisions to hire ahead of demand. So we were going to guess where that demand was going to be.
Mm.
Some of it we got right, some of it we got wrong, but I think it really minimized the effect of the competitiveness of the labor pool on our business. Simultaneous to that, we were really focusing on culture and how do we minimize turnover. Now, like I said, we saw high turnover just like everybody did, but I would say it was about half what our peer group saw. So that helped, right? Because we weren't seeing the 50% turnover that other companies were seeing.
Impressive, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, I guess, I mean, that's, I hadn't necessarily planned to ask it, but I'm just thinking, you know, we're talking about the unprecedented demand back then. I think things since then have now swung in almost the opposite direction, you know, with layoffs happening all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
How are, I guess, there'll probably be a lot of people tuning in that want to know what's going on. I probably get the same question every single day in my job. James, how's the market? Is it picking up just yet? From what I can see, I hate to paint a bleak picture, but not necessarily. I think there's still, kind of a bit of doom and gloom on the horizon. But what are you seeing at your end, Joy? It'd be interesting to know kind of how you're seeing things with your clients and just in general, kind of in that people and culture function at your end.
Yeah, I think we're kind of lucky in that we're so therapeutically aligned as a company.
Mm.
We focus on CNS, we focus on rare, we focus on oncology, we focus on cardiovascular metabolic. And because we're so focused, I think we're a little less affected by these wild undulations in the job market because the people we're looking for are very niche, right? So that said, we are still on track with our growth plans for 2023. We're still hiring hundreds of people all of the time. So I would say there might be a little bit of a softening, but we're not seeing it anywhere near what's happening. And we still intend to hit our end of year headcount targets that we set in the early part of the year. So
amazing.
Yeah, we're not seeing it quite that way. I would say we're seeing a lot more applicants. Our cold apply numbers have tripled, quadrupled year to date.
Yeah. And how's that? I guess I was speaking to someone earlier today. I mean, it was more of a client call for myself, but they had pretty actually probably 4 out of 5 client calls I've had over the last week or so said the same thing. And that was that their applications online have almost doubled, but their time to hire was still pretty much the same. And in some cases, it had actually gone up. How are you finding that at your end?
Yeah, our time to hire has really been pretty consistent. We're about 40 to 49 days on average is our time to hire, our time to fill. I would say, though, we've also made a very concerted effort to take down to close and fill what we call vintage recs,
right.
The ones that were antiques coming into the year. Mm-hmm. So we've made a really concerted effort to push those down. And we've seen, I think, 70% of our openings right now have been open less than 50 days. So I think that's a pretty good number.
Awesome. I'm going to steal that term as well. Vintage or antiques, the antiques.
Yes, exactly.
Brilliant. And look, I guess with this, I mean, it sounds like you're weathering things really, really well. I guess a hot topic that I often discuss with either individuals like yourself, sometimes it's the CEO at smaller organizations, but is the whole diversity and inclusion side of things. I mean, you mentioned that, was it 70% of the workforce is female at your end?
Yeah, over 70% is female.
Wow.
Yeah.
But how are you juggling, I guess, kind of diversity and inclusion as a whole? Do you have specific policies? I know sometimes I'm tasked with, you know, trying to improve certain areas, and there's different ways that we use kind of recruiting in groups and things like that to do that. I'm guessing that falls under your remit as well, but how do you juggle that in, I guess, the world today? Because that's often, it's a challenge one sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I would start by saying, you know, working in an organization that is over 70% female is a very empowering experience. And it's one it's unique for my career, certainly. But it's one that holds a lot of, I think, accountability and responsibility for everyone to make sure they're bringing their best to work. Because when you're this heavily saturated with women, some of the old fashioned stereotypical ways of thinking about leadership that might be defined or associated with a more masculine style of leadership just don't work.
Yeah.
They're ineffective. So leading from a true sense of leadership and servant leadership is very well respected. So when we have people join, you know, they have to want to join an organization where they're going to be modeling the more modern types of leadership. So that's the first thing that I would say. And then in terms of how we're fostering the sense of belonging, or how our approach is really around a sense of belonging. So we began 2 years ago, I think it is now, where we hired an external company, a third party called Diversity and HR Solutions, and they did an audit basically of everything that we do. They looked at all of our policies, procedures, offer to accept rates, turnover, exit interview data, you name it. And then they conducted a bunch of focus groups and surveyed our employees to understand kind of what is the experience here. And we were lucky to learn that we had over 90% sense of belonging from those surveyed across all critical diversity categories. So we felt very lucky we were not expecting that. So that was a happy thing to learn. From there, we said, well, these are probably the highest these scores will ever be, because now we're going to teach people more about what it means to work in a diverse environment. And this is where I think the fact that we are 76% female and women want something different from their work experience than perhaps I got when I was in my 20s, right? Or in my 40s even. Women want something very different now. And or maybe we wanted it all along, but we're going to get it now. That's maybe the way to think about it. But that sense of belonging was what we really leaned into, that I can be myself. I can be honest about what my experiences are. I can be seen as a valuable contributor with what I bring to the workplace. And it doesn't matter what my unique identifier is. I can belong here, right? So we set up a diversity council. They've since launched some employee resource groups. We do inclusion discussion circle conversations every month that are extremely powerful. The topics are chosen by our employees and they're facilitated externally. But things like when Russia invaded Ukraine, we had the topic of the effect of war on women and children. That was one of the effect of violence on women and children was one of the topics in these inclusion circles. We've had them on mental health. We have them on race. We have them on what is it, how are we doing as a diverse environment? You know, we have them on religion. So there's a ton of different topics, and in speaking about them and giving a forum for it that's supported by leadership, it really helps to cultivate that sense of belonging. And I was just overseas this summer, and you know, I held a focus group with employees about diversity, and one of the things that they lifted to me was, I feel very accepted as a woman leader in my company, not so much in my local community or the country that I live in, but and it's a little bit of culture shock to feel so powerful as a leader in your company and not in your community. So still a lot of work to do there, but those are some examples.
Wow. So it sounds like you're absolutely smashing it, Joy, if I'm being upfront, which is good. I mean, we don't always do it, but like having had this chance to kind of reflect back on what you've implemented, what you've done, and maybe listening to yourself, you said you're not particularly one who is very good at bragging or talking about your own successes. But if there was one that you could pull out, you know, one initiative that's gone really well, whether it's the diversity piece or creating that sense of belonging, what would you say it would be? Well, I've stumped you.
I don't know. I mean, and I don't want to take the credit myself, because there's a bunch of people at Worldwide that make all of this happen. I just get to sit here on the podcast with you and represent their work. So first, I want to say that we have a big team of people who work on these topics every day in our people and workplaces teams.
Yeah.
So it's a definite collective effort, and certainly one that's very heavily partnered with department level leadership. Like, that's where all these things hit application. I think the thing I'm most proud of that we've delivered, or that we can, is the culture. And I think the reason for that is there's no one person you can point to say this person is the reason for our culture. It's become its own organism within the company. And that's pretty amazing. I've worked on a lot of culture transformation projects in my career. Some went horribly because leadership wasn't aligned with what the employees were asking for and never would be. Others went really well because the employees wanted a culture and leadership listened to it and fostered it and enabled it. But this is kind of like a magical alchemy, because employees and leaders want the same thing and they're working together to make it happen. So I think that's the one I'm most proud of, because it's the most unique.
It's not something that I come across too often. I think it just reverts back to that word of belonging, really, doesn't it? That everyone seems to have the same agenda, which is nice. So look, in terms of, I guess, plans moving forward, look, you've been with the organization for quite some time now. If it's 2019 through to 2023, blimey, years are flying past.
They are.
What is next in terms of for Worldwide, in terms of headcount? So when you joined, how has it increased? And you said that you're looking to or on target to hit your growth plans for this year.
Mm-hmm.
What is, you know, the next 18 months going to look like? What plans are on the horizon for the organization and for you and your team as well?
Yeah. Well, when I joined Worldwide, we had just under 1,700 employees, and we have 3,300 now. I expect we'll continue to grow at that pace, 30% a year. Wow. For the next several years. I don't see that stopping. Mm. So that's exciting because organizations change the bigger they get, to your point earlier, right? Sometimes the big, you know, we have to be more and more conscious of it. I think that's probably the thing that keeps us all up at night is how do we keep this culture as we grow? I think, so we'll continue to see that on the headcount front. I think we will continue to be surprised by the world. We didn't see the pandemic coming. We don't see any of these geopolitical crises coming. We see climate impact coming, but we don't know where or when or how it's going to impact employees. So I think that that's the thing we have to be prepared for is the thing we're not prepared for.
Mm.
That's the big one. That's going to have the biggest impact on our work is the thing that we don't know is a thing today. It's lurking around the corner. We don't know what it is yet. So, and I think that's a superpower our team has developed, both within the people and workplaces teams and within our leadership, is our emergency preparedness and our emergency response has been quite excellent.
Mm.
So I feel pretty confident that whatever bizarre, unprecedented activity appears next, that we'll have a good approach to it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we normally finish up the show with a quick fire questions round, but I guess before we even jump into that, I guess there's one question that's kind of on my mind, because I'm almost miffed at how you've managed to create this sense of a belonging at such a large organization. What is it that is so good about Worldwide? Because clearly there's something, and like mm-hmm. you know, when people say, oh, it's the people, you know, I tend to agree with that, because as I said, I've had Amon Pera on the show, I've had Jeff, I've had a few people, and all senior level individuals, but all of them so down to earth. You know, what is in the water that is you know, if you were to try and put your finger on it, or a couple of things, what would you say is so good? And there's probably, when this goes out, you're going to have your application rate on LinkedIn and everywhere else is going to go even higher, by the way. But what is it that is so good? Because it's like, it just seems crazy that it is going so well, which isn't always the case when I speak to individuals in your shoes.
No, I know that. I mean, I've been doing this type of work my entire career, and I have a lot of experiences that don't look like this one. So I mean, I think there is some magic in it. So we'll say there's some kind of X factor in the water. I don't know what it is.
Mm.
I do think this realness is at most levels of our leadership and represented in a lot of people at Worldwide. People are very honest and clear in their requests, very kind and compassionate. I think one of the things that has been remarkable to me about working in life science and a CRO in particular is this passion and purpose kind of idea that, like, we're really working on things that matter. They matter a lot. We're supporting biotechs and pharmaceutical companies in creating life-saving, life-changing therapies. And they're not just for the person, but for their family. So there's a real powerful awareness of the magnitude of what we're doing that I think attracts a certain kind of human being to do that kind of work. And so then, okay, so then what separates us from all the other CROs? And, you know, we had a group of leaders in our RTP North Carolina, Raleigh-Durham office in North Carolina a couple of weeks ago. And one of them said they were having this culture discussion in their team. And they said, it's as if the leadership at Worldwide went to every other CRO and learned what employees hated and then promised to never do it here. And so, I mean, that might be a little bit of it. We have people who have come from other companies that have experiences they don't want to repeat. So when they come here, they don't repeat them.
Yeah.
Right?
That's fair.
So I don't know. I don't know what the magic is. Culture.
I think that could be it, though. You get
Yeah.
enough individuals like that that have just been so sick and tired of the way it shouldn't be done. Get
Yeah.
them all working together, and all of a sudden, things start to happen the way they should be done.
Yeah. I
So.
mean, a lot of new hires will tell us, you know, I felt like a number there. I feel like a person here. I'm telling you things here I would never have told my manager there. I can explain what's going on and why I'm distracted today, and I feel safe to do that here, where I didn't feel that there. I can work on a therapeutic area I'm passionate about here. I was pigeonholed there. So those are the kinds of things they tell us. But I think it's more than that. There's something in this alignment of passion and purpose. There's something in the life-saving work that we do. And there's something in the love that exists in our employee population and the amount of respect and compassion they have for each other. And some of that's just intrinsic to the people who work here. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, look, as I said, that was one question for me. Now I've got a couple of questions for you, a quick fire round here. So look, if we were to kind of roll back the years, you were in your recruiting days working with your mum, what is the one piece of advice that you would perhaps give to, Joy then, or just your younger self in general?
Yeah, I think I would have told myself to have a pit crew. You know, in racing, how there's a pit crew. I have one now, but it took me a long time to get one. I would say get a pit crew early in life.
Amazing. Get
Yeah.
it. I could do with one of them around the house at times with my kids. Definitely.
Well, exactly. I mean, we all need to have a really great circle of people who complement our lives and whose lives we complement, right? Where they give us certain things and we give them certain things. And I think I waited till too long to make sure that I had that in place.
Well, I like the way that you phrase it though, pit crew. So there's that, and there's vintage requirements and antiques. Like, there's a couple of things I'm stealing here, Joy. But my next question, if there was one book or resource that you would recommend to, I guess, our audience, which is predominantly clinical research focused, what would it be? Doesn't necessarily have to be industry specific, could just be something that you love reading yourself.
Yeah, there's a book I've read so many times, it's embarrassing how the book now looks. And that is The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And the reason for it is we spend, and I think women in particular, spend so much time trying to have this veil of perfection of things that we do just flawlessly. And the reality is we're all imperfect. We all mess up all the time. And the sooner we can just own it, forgive it, move on, the faster we get to a solution. And it doesn't keep us kind of locked in place. I love that book.
Awesome. Awesome. I like that. And look, my next question is, I guess, probably more work related. If, in terms of when you're building a team, building a culture, what are the top three things that you value most and you would most like to see from, whether it's applicants to worldwide or just job applicants in general?
I like to understand a person's relationship with work. Where does work come into your life? I think that that matters. Another thing I would add would be communication for sure, that a person has a strong set of communication skills, practices, tools at their disposal, that they've got low defensiveness. And they're very open to being wrong and owning it when they're wrong and admitting it when they're wrong and fixing it when they're wrong. And then I think just because of the way the world is right now, a really strong sense of personal curiosity, professional curiosity, almost like relentless pursuit of curiosity. So when most people give up asking a question, you ask one more. Yeah.
The inner child is what I call that. I mean, my son would be incredible. You'd hire him on the spot because there's about
Yeah.
20 questions when you think he might be done.
How old is he?
He is four, and boy,
Perfect.
Boy, can he question and negotiate? You know,
Yeah.
don't know what I'm raising there. But look, I guess
Trouble.
that probably rolls in very well to my next question. Look, we've talked so much about work, but I guess we do spend a lot of time with people at work, but often we don't just go to work for a company, we go to work with the people. But what is it that you enjoy outside of work? You know, if you're, whether it's either with colleagues, with friends, with family, what I guess keeps you active outside of worldwide?
Yeah, I love to kayak. I'm an avid kayaker, and living where I live in North Carolina, I can do it almost 9 months a year. So
Wow.
I love to do that. I spend every free weekend that I can out on some body of water somewhere. I also have three kids. So two of them are in university, one is still at home. So I like to spend as much time with them as I can. It's different now than when they're four, but it's still nice to spend time with them as well. And I've got family here as well. My parents are local as well. So getting some good time with them. And then I'm a Gemini, so I like to have an adventure. I like to get out there and see the world and try new things, and just seeing travel is a big one, but just an adventure. I'm up for anything on a weekend. Let's hop in the car and go see what we can find out. Yeah.
Absolutely love that. Well, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, learning more about worldwide, I guess, because as I said, I've had a couple of folks on the show, but it's normally been so much focused on them and their journeys. It's good to hear about the organization and kind of what goes on behind the scenes, I think, because at the moment I get so many questions from job seekers about, you know, how things are evaluated, what actually goes on at these companies. So it's just good to actually understand what someone in your shoes is actually juggling when there's so many, posts on LinkedIn having a dig sometimes at recruiters and employers. So no, it's good to see
Yeah.
the people behind it, and it's been a pleasure. But look, thanks once again for being on the show. And if there's anyone that wants to learn more about, I guess, worldwide or, you know, anything that you guys are up to, what's the best way to kind of inquire further? What's the website, LinkedIn groups, or anything like that that they should be signposted to, Joy?
Yeah, definitely follow Worldwide Clinical Trials on LinkedIn. That's the going to be the a very easy way to access a lot of real-time information about us. And then also visit our careers page at worldwide.com. There's a some all of our jobs are posted globally there, and you can search based on whatever your particular skills and requirements are.
Awesome. Well, look,
Yeah,
thanks
we'd love to hear
again
from
for
you.
being part of the show. Been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.